Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, the woman standing by to talk to me next has had quite the full and exotic life. These days, Dana Gillespie. She's best known as a blues singer, but she's also starred in film and theatre. She was the very first Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar on the West End stage, and she hung out in Mustique with Princess Margaret and the Rolling Stones. Dana Gillespie still has the soul of the swinging 60s, so we might also hear about her formative relationships with people like Bowie, who she met as a young teenager. But first, here's a taster of one of her biggest hits, which is also the title of her recently published memoir, This Is Weren't Born a Man.
You love like a woman, but you walk like a sailor. You give like a lady, don't take.
Good morning, Miriam. You've got the book there with you.
I have in front of me. It is a great read, Weren't Born a Man. Look, you've acted in films, on the West End stage, organised festivals, been painted by Warhol, released dozens of albums in different genres. So how do you, Dana, define yourself? I mean, what might it say on your business card?
I consider myself as a singer-songwriter, and I was always songwriter first. And, you know, in the first album that I made in the 60s, the one thing I cared about was that I was singing songs I'd written, which girl singers didn't usually do.
Now, I know you're mainly a blues artist. Did the blues come first? Was there a moment, a song, a gig that turned you on to the music?
Yes, of course, in 1964 was when the Marquee Club in London, in Soho, opened. It had moved from Oxford Street, and there you could see all the top blues musicians. And of course, it was there that I first met David Bowie, but of course, his name was Jones. And I just stick with the blues because there's no sell-by date with the blues. I can do it if I can still sing and stand till I'm 99. The albums that I did in the 70s, when Bowie and I had the same manager, that was all slightly more glamorous. That's where that song, Weren't Born a Man, came from.
And you've sung blues to massive crowds, I mean, of over a million people, isn't that right?
But, Miriam, I hasten to add, they'd actually come to see my Indian guru, a man called Satya Sai Baba, my Indian master. And there was a million people, and he had asked me to sing. And I just started to make albums for my own pleasure, actually, hopefully for a few others as well, in Sanskrit, a kind of music called bhajans. But I was told, no, he wanted blues. So, yes, I had to quickly adapt my rather risque repertoire and put some uplifting stuff, because technically I was singing in an ashram. And an ashram is the last place that you'd be singing songs like Organ Grinder, It's Not Your Organ, But the Way You Grind, or Big 10-inch, which is, in fact, a funny song from the 50s and 60s. So you have to have a sense of humour, but I knew it wouldn't work out in India. Many Indians and followers across the world, they know what an honour it was to perform for him.
Who is he?
Well, he's an Indian holy man, I suppose. Well, he's not physically on this earth as of about 5 or 6 years ago. You know, he opened schools and hospitals and got in fresh water to villages, did various somewhat miraculous things. You know, India's kind of has had a few holy men in their lives. In the 60s, people like myself and Jimmy Page, who of course went on to be Led Zeppelin, he was on my first album, and we used to go and listen to Indian concerts.
Let's go back to your family, if we can, Dana. You were born with an incredible name, Richenda Antoinette de Winterstein Gillespie, is that correct?
Well, well pronounced. And actually, at the age of 11, I decided I must change my name because Richenda is an old family name that just runs between my mother's family and three other families. And quite often the girls would be called Richenda. And in fact, my great-great-great-great-grandmother and grandfather were to be seen on the British £5 note up until a couple of years ago when they took off Elizabeth Fry. And there's a picture of my great-great-grandfather who's called Sir Thomas Fowell Buxton, who was into abolishing slavery. And they put Winston Churchill instead. My mother's side was an illustrious, marvellous old family. And my father's side, because he was devastatingly good-looking and a bit of an over-hit with the ladies, much to my mother's horror, from him I got how to be a good raconteur at a dining table. I got stories coming out of my ears. Very lucky that they were so liberal and let me go to all these blues clubs from the age of 13 without having, you know, they never put any curfews on me.
It was a very liberal and tolerant household, wasn't it? It was by any stretch not a typical setup.
Well, it wasn't because, of course, as I said, my father was such a hit with the women. Mistresses were in abundance. And then finally, one day, he moved the main one and he said to my mother, let's move her into the house. And fortunately, where we lived, and I've always lived in South Kensington, the house was huge with five floors and a basement. And there was enough room for everyone to live their lives. They got on very well. And my mother then met the man that she married. So they were on the top two floors. My father and his mistress on the first three floors. And at the age of 15, I was gloriously and happily banished to the basement where I could play drums because I thought I was going to be a drummer, decorated in my own style, which was very oriental even then. And it was all extremely happy. And I just knew perhaps not to mention this odd arrangement at school because most people in those days wouldn't have understood. But my father was super intelligent, had a huge library of books. I was brought up with a family that believed in education and communication and lots of what I always now call jokingly social intercourse. So dinner parties were quite amusing, even though I was quite small.
So how did you originally, you were very young, I think you got your first music deal at 15. How did you get into music? How did you get noticed and recorded so early?
Because actually, I suppose Bowie, still Jones then, we used to go to the green room of the television show Ready, Steady, Go. And if you mingled in there, you met with agents and managers and producers, and you networked. In fact, Bowie was far better at networking than I was. But the producer of Ready, Steady, Go saw me. Apparently, he always liked large, busted women. I'd learned from an early age, if you had the top button undone, you were more likely to be in the newspapers than not. Tame by today's standards, but pretty outrageous then.
Listen, here's a little reminder, Dana, of you, very young Dana Gillespie, appearing on TV in the 60s with, I think, a performance of your very first single.
On a wagon bound for market, there's a calf with a mournful eye. High above him is the swallow, winging swiftly through the sky.
That's you, Dana, there, appearing on TV in the 1960s. Do you remember that?
Well, I do, actually. But all I can say is, how on earth did you find it? Yes, it was my first single on Pi Records. I recorded it when I was 15, and I've got Donovan on guitar. And because it was kind of folky, they decided to bring in an ocarina, you know, that instrument that you blow, because it was folk era. My voice was perfectly good for folk in those days. I was innocent sounding and in tune, thank God. But when I listen to it now, I do realize it's about 57 years old, that track. And it's amazing that I'm still going strong. And I just finished recording my 72nd album.
You spoke earlier about, obviously, your friendship with David Bowie. How and when did you first meet him? You seem to have known each other from a very young age, Dana.
I'd gone to the Marquee Club, and this must have been in 1964, so I was 15. And the opening act, the support act, was Davy Jones and the Manish Boys. And, of course, I loved the Marquee because all the blues being played there, like the Yardbirds. But at the end of the evening, I'm standing at the back, sort of preparing to go home. And at that time, I had waist-length hair. And I was brushing my hair. And Jones comes up behind me, takes the brush from my hair, carries on brushing, and whispers rather pleasantly in my ear, "Can I come home with you tonight?" So, of course, I said yes. And so we walked home. It was about a 25-minute walk to my parents' house. I had to smuggle him past my parents' bedroom. And he stayed the night in my single bed. And the next morning, I had to get him out past my parents. But just as I was creeping down the stairs with him, my parents came out of their bedroom. So I introduced him to my parents. "This is David." And they shook hands. So we always remained friends. He helped me with my early songs because he knew I was a songwriter. He used to play me stuff. And one occasion, he rang me up and he said, "I've just written a song. I think it's different." And he said, "I wrote it half an hour ago. I'll be on your doorstep," which he was 10 minutes later. And he played me Space Oddity. Bowie had written this song for me called Andy Warhol. I never understood why, because I'm not particularly nuts about Andy Warhol's art. I wouldn't want a soup can hanging on my wall for anything. But he just wrote me this song, and then I sang it with him on the John Peel show, which was quite a big deal in those days. And it was on my album, and then he liked my version so much that he did it on his own album. So we kind of rubbed along together as friends, and then he went through various women, but then finally the one who became his wife, Angie.
And you stayed very friendly with David Bowie and Angie, didn't you? Like, very friendly.
How explicit do you want me to get, Miriam?
Well, it's a Sunday morning, but...
Okay. Right. Well, yeah, we were friends. But you have to remember, those swinging 60s was, of course, when I met David. It was, I think I met Angie then in 1970. Everyone was having a wild time. You know, I have put it pretty clearly in my book. And as you say, it's a Sunday morning, so I'll kind of keep it clean. But what people forget is that music, for him and definitely for me, was the most important thing. When I look back at my life, and the fact that I'm still writing and recording, and music has threaded through my life. Nothing else has really mattered. And that was the overriding thing, especially between his and my relationship. It was a musical one first. You know, we were young. Everyone was young and having a whale of a time. How times have changed. Nobody can do anything anymore. Well, especially now with the pandemic.
You were so young. Like, you were only 16 and you met Bob Dylan and ended up being with him. I mean, I'm just wondering, was your innocence stolen from you, or do you look at that differently, Dana?
Oh, I definitely look at it differently. But first of all, I've always felt innocent all through my life, actually. Okay, I had to deal with a lot of talkers. You had to deal with guys that groped you. I mean, in the book, I have described quite a few incidences when I've had to deal with, you know, rather gropey record producers or film producers. But it never affected me. I never felt, oh, my life is ruined. I just thought, oh, well, God, you know, I've learned from this. I move on. I never had a bad time when I look back. But I know it's different for everyone else. And if somebody has ever done something bad to me, I always feel sorry for them, because I would rather that they do something bad to me than, heaven forfend, that I should do something bad to someone else. That I couldn't live with.
We're going to take some more music now, Dana. This next song is from your 2010 album, I Rest My Case. Tell me a little about it before we hear it.
Well, you know, I always like to sing my own lyrics for a start. And I'd noticed that when women got to about 50 years old, they'd be, let's say, at a dining table, or they'd be going, "God, don't me, it's really hot in here." Obviously, it was the menopause hitting. And so I thought I'd write that, but I just called it Funk Me. I probably would have said a different word for it, but then I knew it would never get played on the radio. It's just a bit of a fun song.
You know, I've been around, I'm experienced, and I've lived my life to the full. But I can't can't explain what's happening to me, though I sure can feel the pull. Like a moth to a flame that's yearning, I'm burning up and there ain't no turning back. Whatever it is, it's getting close in here, and I feel I'm about to crack. Funk me, it's hot. What sort of fever have I got? Funk me, it's hot. Yeah. Oh, is it me or is it what? Something strange is going on, though I can't see it with my eyes. And I don't think that I'm fooling myself, 'cause I can feel it, feel the temperature rise. Oh, thump me, it's hot. What sort of fever have I got? Oh, funk me, it's hot.
Ooh, it's hot.
Now is it me or is it what?
That's your song, Dana. Funk me, it's hot. As we close our interview, Dan, I've been thinking, you mentioned people like you were so close to Bowie, you knew Bob Dylan, you were talking about Elton John, how well you knew him. They all went on to be global superstars. Do you ever think back when you were with David Jones, David Bowie, way back when in your mid-teens, do you wonder why that didn't happen to you or not?
Well, I didn't wonder about it then, because the people that I hung with in those days, none of them had made it big either. You know, Bowie and I even auditioned for Hair and we both got turned down. Yeah, I mean, maybe my mother would have said, had she been alive, you know, why aren't your records selling in massive quantities? But you never know. I would say I'd probably have to die first before people will recognize all the albums I've done. I don't really ponder on things that I can't work out. It's just a question of when. I never give up. I will keep singing and recording till I'm probably carried off the stage in my wooden overcoat.
Well, Dana, your memoirs, published by Hawksmoor, Weren't Born a Man, by Dana Gillespie. It's a fascinating read. You've had a fascinating life. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak to me this morning.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Have a good Sunday.